You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, lavishly luscious listeners. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 103, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your irrefutably, irreplaceable, and irresistible irregulars, irradiating iridescence.
I'm Colin.
And I'm Chris.
So Dana is not here this week. She's off to doing mysterious Dana stuff.
What a Dana does.
Yep. All right, time for our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hot Shot.
And we're down one hot shot.
Yeah, we're down one hot shot.
Oh, true. This is a face-off.
Yes, boy face against boy.
Off.
Here we have a random trivial pursuit card that I picked from the box. And so Colin versus Chris, they have their barnyard buzzers. Here we go. Blue wedge for geography. The Caribbean island of Aruba is part of what European kingdom? Colin.
I believe that's the Netherlands.
Correct.
Oh.
All right. Pink wedge for pop culture. What R&B singer and Grammy winner adopted a stage name inspired by the instrument she plays? Chris.
Did Alicia Keys?
Yes.
I just now pieced that together. Okay.
What instrument is an Alicia?
Right.
No.
Bob Tuba.
She was born Alicia Aguilera Cook.
Huh.
Alicia Keys.
Huh.
Here we go. Yellow wedge. Who shot Harry Whittington on February 11th, 2006?
Harry Whittington. Whittington.
February 11th, 2006.
Of course, Chris.
Richard Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, right. This was the pheasant hunting mishap.
Sprayed him with a whole load of pellets.
There's a little bit here. The two men were quail hunting.
Quail.
When Cheney accidentally hit Whittington with birdshot.
Yeah. You think you're having a bad day, and then Dick Cheney shoots you in the face.
I just wanted some quail.
Yeah, but you know what? Now he's a trivia answer.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd let Dick Cheney quail shot me in the face.
So if you're listening,
what would you not
Mr.
do?
Cheney,
you know, he would owe me one. And he,
big
you know,
time.
There's a lot, big time. And there's a lot of stuff he can make happen.
That's true.
You'd be playing that quail card for the rest of your life.
Quail card in your pocket, yeah.
I think you should. I think it's worth for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You got shot in the face.
Well, have his people call my people. Okay. Shot in the face.
We'll plan it. All right, purple wedge. What supermarket tabloid featured regular appearances by Batboy, Ed Anger, and an alien interested in U.S. politics? Everybody.
The Weekly World News.
Yes.
The only true newspaper ever published.
This is like one of those, like, oh, Loch Ness Monster spotted.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Or yep. A woman like, aliens fathered my children. Right. And it'll have like a poorly photoshopped picture of her with her arm around like the alien. for example.
Yeah.
All right. Green wedge for science. What artificial sweetener based on sucralose was introduced in 1999? Everybody.
Splenda.
All right. Last question, orange wedge. What singer renamed Silver Dollar City, Tennessee after herself? Chris?
Dolly Parton?
Yes!
Yeah, was okay. This where Dolly, Dollywood?
Yep.
Okay.
Dolly Parton. The park's been known as Dollywood since 1986.
Mm-hmm.
Good job, brains. Oh, we have a quick, actually, but Dana's not here to do the voice. So can someone do the actually voice?
Actually.
Okay. So last episode, I think Dana made a little slip. She said that Cillian Murphy, actor, was in Breakfast on Mars. A lot of people wrote in, pronounce Killian.
Yes.
Murphy. Oh, yes. Killian. Yeah.
And nice. It was Breakfast on Pluto.
Oh,
yeah. Close. Jeez.
Yes.
Well, actually, yes. Distance wise, not that close, but they're yeah. both.
And actually, planets. It's pronounced Marfy.
I guess they're not.
Killian
planets.
Marfy.
Wait, really?
No, no, no. Oh, I'm okay. just, yeah.
Bad trivia. I'm no.
bad. Sorry, sorry.
All right. So this week, we decided to dedicate the whole episode to your face.
Your face.
Your face. Your grimace.
Right in your face.
Your kisser. Your mug.
Your mug.
Mm. Yeah. So get ready for In Your Face.
Kick it off here with a quick question for you guys. Are you familiar with the term prosopagnosia?
Proso. I'm not, but
Okay, let's break it down. Proso. Yeah. Prag.
I'll tell you the roots are prosopon and agnosia.
I'm going to go ahead and say no. I'm not going to be able to figure this out.
Prosopon means face in mm-hmm. Greek. Okay. Agnosia, you may know this not
like
knowing.
Agnostic.
Right. So, okay. Someone with prosopagnosia suffers from face blindness is what it's more commonly
what does
called.
That mean?
This is a condition where you, in its simplest terms, you literally cannot form memories of faces.
Uh-huh.
You cannot identify people who you may otherwise know very well based on their face. You're just neurologically, your brain is just not wired to encode that in a way that's easily retrievable.
Mm-hmm.
So
people have this.
People have this. So here's where it gets even more interesting. Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt believes that he suffers from face blindness, and he has said that he has just extreme difficulty remembering people's faces. And for a long time, you know, he kind of just thought, well, this is just, I'm sort of weird, but he realizes, no, wait, this is a thing, face blindness, and he's talked about this in interviews. It's really hard for him to be out in the world, and it's very embarrassing.
But okay, so let me ask you this. Can't they rely on sense of hearing and voice to connect?
Yes, and this is why people with face blindness can still function in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They talk about this actually in the Oliver Sacks book, The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. It's one of the good Oliver Sacks books. But he talks about, a man who could not recognize his wife's face. He could recognize her voice and tell it was her, but like looking at her, you know, in person or in photos, he would have to rely on other cues, you know, like, or looking at photos of family members. He'd be more likely to remember a jacket that someone was wearing than the face.
Mm-hmm. So it's not really when they see someone, they see blank.
Right.
They see the face. They just can't make the connection.
They can't distinguish it. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. And apparently it's really, disorienting for people to grow up with this, because up until a certain point, you don't necessarily know that, people can actually recognize faces. I just thought this was how people worked in the world.
Yeah.
So ladies, you may as well be Angelina Jolie if you ever meet Brad Pitt out on the street,
Piggybacking on that fact, I have a little quiz. It's themed around almost like the opposite of what you described, Colin. It's the psychological phenomenon that causes people to actually see faces in inanimate things. Or actually, we talked about backmasking before. It's for people to perceive what they want to perceive, and usually it's human or something that they have a connection
to. Colin, the exception proves the rule. Like, there's people who cannot just recognize faces, but everybody else, we're like specifically
looking for
faces. Our brain is just looking for faces everywhere, and like that's how there's something about the human face that we just like automatically identify with.
Yeah.
That's why when you like right now, if you're sitting around at home and have a pencil and paper, draw two dots and a straight line underneath them.
Yeah.
And like it's face.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like your brain will just pick that up. That is a face.
So this is called pareidolia.
Mm-hmm.
Pareidolia is the name of this phenomenon. So to your point, Chris, Carl Sagan, famous scientist and astronomer, he hypothesized that it's probably a survival technique that humans are looking, seeking out, identifying faces, because that's how we connect and that's how we interact with people. So a couple of examples are using those pictures of dog butts And people are like, oh, I found Jesus
on
the dog butt.
Yes.
Or like when you're cloud gazing, oh, this looks like a baby and this looks like a whatever.
Or you'll see a lot of people have like pictures of vegetables, you know, like,
this
potato looks like my Uncle Oscar.
Or if there's like wall, if there's like wall with random patterns, you know, cracks in the walls or things like that, you'll find something that looks like a face. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My favorite one is probably a picture you took and sent to me, Chris, a long time ago. It's, you know, back of bathrooms or doors, there's a little coat.
Oh, yeah, I know this one.
And one is, and the picture you sent had someone write down, like, what, drunk octopus is trying to fight you.
Yeah.
And it's like the eyes are kind of like, they look drunk. They're just screws on this coat hanger. And it looks like he has his tentacles
up. Yeah.
And just, once you see it, you can't not see it. I see drunk octopus wants to fight every time I look at the one on my door.
Yeah, we moved into this apartment and we had drunk octopus on the back of the door. And I'm like, yay.
So here, I have quick quiz about things that are related to pareidolia.
All right.
First question. Belgium or not Belgium? The Rorschach test. No, also known as the ink block test.
I'll say not Belgium.
It is not Belgium.
All right.
Oh, wow.
It is a Swiss and developed by Swiss psychologist Hermann Rorschach. That's named after him. I didn't know this, but I'm going to throw it out to you guys. How many ink blots are there in the official Rorschach test?
Oh, you know, I was just talking to somebody who actually administers this.
I thought they're just random ink blots.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. There is a specific set.
Yeah.
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 I feel like it's, man, 30, 35?
I don't know.
Chris?
7.
10.
Mm, oh, okay.
10 official ones. And you can find them online. And each one is supposed to make a connection to some part of your personality. All right. Next question. According to some Asian folklore and also Aztec folklore, what kind of mammal lives on the moon? Colin.
That's the rabbit, isn't it?
Yes, it's the rabbit, the moon rabbit.
I know that from Japan. I didn't know the Aztecs did.
So Japanese, Korean, and Chinese folklore and other East Asian folklore have the kind of same type of story involving a rabbit on the moon preparing something. Because it looks like in Japan, the rabbit is making mochi with a mortar and pestle. And in Chinese, he's making medicine. And it's funny that the fact that the Aztecs had almost the same origin folklore creation story of the bunny on the moon.
Right.
And in some pictures of the moon, you can kind of see an outline of like some sort of blob with two big ears. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, it's a rabbit.
Sailor Moon, you know, the cartoon Sailor Moon, her name is Usagi or Rabbit.
Oh, that's cute. So the story is that there is a man begging for food and there might be other animals. And the monkey offered fruit and this other animal offered this. And the rabbit being like, well, I don't have anything to offer you except for myself. So I'll jump into a fire and feed myself to you. And the gods were touched and be like, we're going to remember you, rabbit. We can't save you from burning yourself, but we're going to we're gonna memorialize you on the moon. Two separate cultures have almost the same story.
Huh.
All right. Next question. Which U.S. state's quarter prominently features an example of pareidolia? Colin?
Together?
New Hampshire.
Correct. Yay!
You had me thinking about the moon still, and I was like, space shuttle, Florida. No. Yes.
And it is of?
The Old Man in the Mountain.
Yeah.
Sort of a facial profile in a rock in New Hampshire.
Which sadly collapsed.
Yep.
It collapsed May 3rd, 2003. Mm-hmm. And now there's no face.
Right.
People leave flowers there all the time.
Oh,
kind of be
no.
like, oh, poor face.
I can see that.
But
I
it
can
does,
see that,
it,
yeah.
It is a really kind of handsome structure when you look at it. You're like, no, I do see a face.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It does really look
It always
like a
reminded
face.
Me a little bit of like Abraham Lincoln.
All right. Last question. In 1994, a Floridian woman took a bite out of her freshly made grilled cheese sandwich and discovered that the grilled cheese sandwich on the side had Virgin Mary's face on it. 10 years later, in 2004, she successfully sold that sandwich on eBay. How much was the winning bid for the Virgin Mary grilled cheese sandwich that's 10 years old at that time?
$1,500.
You want to take a guess, Colin?
I was going to guess $1,000.
$28,000.
Wow.
Wow. For a 10-year-old sandwich.
With, now, did it, with a bite did taken
now
out of it.
Yeah.
Did it sell, or did people troll the auction?
So,
oh.
GoldenPalace.com, which is an online casino, wanted that, or the company wanted that sandwich.
Wow.
And so they
we will stop at nothing.
Yes, they
get that sandwich.
They said they will spend as much as it took them to have the sandwich.
I think it's probably more accurate to say they wanted the publicity that would come with them buying,
you know what?
A sandwich.
I never thought that
and
is
now
really
we're
clever.
Talking about them.
And now we're talking about them.
We just
name dropped them.
We did.
We fell in the trap. And so my first reaction, you know, I remember when this was kind of in the news, or you know, people were finding things on their toast all the time. It was like Jesus or Virgin Mary. But I remember this one, and my question was always, how did she keep this sandwich for 10 years and not have it rot or get moldy? She just put it in a plastic box with some cotton balls. That's all she did.
Yeah.
And, you know, she claimed that there was no mold. For 10 years, no mold.
Yeah. Mold comes from moisture, so if it dried out before mold would have had a chance to form, then you would not get any mold.
I can believe that.
Yep.
Well, so thank God for Slate, because someone actually did a scientific breakdown of how and why, and predicted why it did not get moldy.
Uh-huh.
And here are some of the reasons. The grilled cheese sandwich, there's oil on both sides.
Oh, true. Yep.
Either butter or margarine, and there's usually trans fat in that. And fungus doesn't really like hanging out with trans fat because they can't digest it. So they kind of stay away from it. Also, the cheese filling, the calcium, is kind of a mold retardant. That could be why. And also the cheese may have affected the pH level of the whole sandwich, so some fungus can't strive on that. So yeah, very, very interesting. That was my big question, is what does she do with the sandwich? I guess I'd put it in the freezer. I don't know. But there you go.
You might freeze the Virgin Mary right off of it, though, you know?
Oh, that's true, because you want to keep it.
Right, the frost. And
who wants to buy a sandwich if her face is...
That's not right. Now, then it's just an old sandwich.
Yeah, yeah. I would
like,
say that.
Not like now, when it's like an important...
Divine
historical
sandwich.
Historical relic,
So there you go. Next time you see Drunk Octopus, it's just a phenomenon that we humans have, always trying to look for faces.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we spent a lot of time talking about the face, but let's go in the face.
How deep in the face?
Are you familiar with the term rhinotilexomania?
Something with the nose.
Nose.
Rhino.
Mania is mania.
Yes. Compulsion.
What's telexo?
Telexo means to pick at. This is rhinotilexomania is the compulsive picking of the nose. That's right. It's time to talk about boogers.
Today.
You know,
on a very special episode.
Are you ready, Colin? I don't know. I'm ready for
it. Let's sit down and really just have it. You might not like boogers, but you need to know this. If all of the boogers in the world were to disappear, we would just die instantly.
Wait, really?
Yeah. So when you breathe in, you're taking in glorious, life-giving oxygen, but you are also taking in any bacteria, viruses, microbes, what have you, that are floating in the air and that will destroy you. Mucus is really good at grabbing onto them, based on, like, you know, what it is and how it's made up. The mucus grabs the microbes before they get up into your bloodstream into your system.
Got it.
The cilia, the tiny, tiny hairs that line your nose, constantly move the mucus back into your esophagus. They're shuffling it along.
Sweeping it.
Yes, yes. Every day, your body produces 1 liter of nasal mucus. And you drink it all because it just it goes back. You're constantly swallowing it. It goes back into your esophagus. Oh, no.
I'm so grossed out.
So basically, it just grabs onto the bacteria and just sort of sends them, you know, through your digestive system, basically, before they have the chance to get into your circulatory system.
I see. They just don't want it in your bloodstream. Your body doesn't want it in your bloodstream, but swallowing it and traveling to your stomach is okay.
It's like our incinerator in our stomach.
Exactly. So, but we're not really here to talk about mucus in general. We are here specifically to discuss boogers.
All right.
Okay.
Now, there is no scientific term for boogers. It's just, you know, boogers. Or dried mucus. Mucus.
Okay.
When air hits your nose, the mucus down towards the bottom dries out and becomes crusty boogers. Now, what you do with it then is your own business. However, I will say, one study in 1995 found that 91% of people admitted anonymously via the mail to picking their nose.
And the other 9% are liars.
Exactly.
Another, what else do you get?
Now, right. It's, yeah. So basically 100% of people pick their nose. So don't try to tell me they don't pick your nose. Yeah. You do. You do. Everybody does. 44% of respondents.
Oh no. Oh no.
Admitted to, as an adult, eating.
As an adult is a key word.
As an adult. Eating their boogers. Now, there was a study that I saw, and this is inconclusive, that says it actually might be good for you. But that doesn't, I'm not going to.
Hey, but you're already eating it anyways. It's a dried version of what they're eating.
Right, exactly. You are constantly, you're right, your mucus is constantly going into your throat,
poisonous.
Your stomach. Right. But at the same time, still kind of gross. Now, the question is, when does it cross the line from, you know, just the sort of clearing out the old nostrils that everybody does, that 91% of people admit to and the other 9% are liars? When does it cross over to rhinotelexomania, as in compulsive, you do it all the time so it is potentially harmful? The study found it's only a small number of people in which, like, they're so into picking their nose that it becomes an actual problem. Like, it becomes a problem for them socially, or it becomes an issue where they're, like, actually doing damage. You know, they're, like, causing nosebleeds.
Right. Oh, my God.
And in a tiny handful of cases, people have reported, I want you to get ready for this. Just a tiny, no, they don't pick all the way up into their brain. That's not what I'm saying. In a tiny handful of cases, people have picked their nose so much that they have poked through their septum and put a hole in the dividing line of their nose, because they pick their nose so much. If anybody out there, serious PSA, if you can pick both of your nostrils at once with the same finger, not normal. Get yourself some help.
Wow. And I would assume, like, a lot of the nosebleeds are damaged, like, they can get infected.
You could. But remember, it's a tiny group of people that do it so much. But if
that's
you're,
harmful.
Yeah. Everybody out there, if you're, like, hurting yourself picking your nose, go get some help for rhinotelexomania is what I'm
pick
saying.
Someone else's nose for a while.
Yeah, pick your friend's nose.
Just for, you know, every other day.
Yep. I will leave you with this. It is said that King Tutankhamun had, amongst everything else he had, his own personal nose picker.
Of course.
The king's private nose picker. Person.
Yeah.
Yep. I did not realize that, like, that should be a goal for future success, but as
now
soon
you
as,
know.
Yep, when I'm a multimillionaire,
yeah.
Personal nose picker.
What else do I need that I don't have?
Personal umbrella holder. Personal nose picker.
Yeah, wow. And they would have to be different people.
Yeah, of course.
Because they need to be concentrated on doing that
one
task.
They must be focused on their craft.
If you're holding the umbrella and picking my nose, I'm going to get wet and or a nosebleed. unless you are just that good.
Oh, he's the best. All right, I want you guys to picture sort of just the classic image of, like, an upper crust 18th century European nobleman or a dandy.
Okay.
All right. And so just close your eyes for a second, right, you know. Right. So, like, I'm thinking, you know, like Dangerous Liaisons.
Okay.
Like that era, right? So if you're like me, so some of the things you're picturing are very fashion related, very
yes.
stereotypical. You got, like, the frilly clothes. Maybe you've got, like, a big puffed up wig. You likely have a very pale face.
Yes, makeup.
Yeah, right? The powdered face. Are you guys picturing a mole as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, and rouge.
Yes. The mole. You'll see this in period cartoons from the time, yeah. caricatures, and, mm-hmm. and it's a persistent feature of caricatures of dandies and upper crust people from the time, even today. You know, where did this come from? Why do we have this image of the mole as an mm-hmm. upper crust mm-hmm. thing? The root of the mole, it isn't some particularly famous person with the mole. It wasn't like from a play or literature. It wasn't a stock character. It was actually a real fashion trend in the late 1700s.
Among men
and women.
Okay.
To have moles.
I
and
think
hot
of
marks.
Like Marie Antoinette,
yes.
that era of like Parisian royalty.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you just give yourself one.
And particularly in France. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as you say, but this was a European thing. Now, you might be thinking, all right, well, that's silly. Not everyone has a mole. Not everyone has a
right.
birthmark. And you'd be right. So the obvious answer is people wore artificial moles.
Of course.
Oh, it's not painted on.
No, not painted on. Mm. Fake moles.
Okay.
So,
did they use like raisinettes? Cut it in half, lick the end.
That's the poor man's fake mole, yeah.
Still a big mole if you use a raisinette.
Yeah. Well, you know, you cut it in half, you've got one for the next day as well. The fake mole, the artificial mole, they were called a mouche, which is a French word. Mouche is the French word for fly. They were made out of different things. Like, they could be velvet. You know, they could be other fabrics. Sometimes they might have been, you know, a little bit of hide. Velvet was very common. And, I mean, people knew they were fake, right? I mean, you weren't trying to fool anybody with your little velvet mole that you would affix on your face. It was kind of just like a little patch. So it didn't matter that it was fake. People knew this was the height of fashion. Height of fashion, men and women.
Wow.
Like a lot of things in the world of fashion, it started small and just got increasingly ridiculous.
Trend.
Yeah. It's like, because, yeah, you know, once the current level of the trend is passé, you got to take it somewhere else. They became so popular that it was actually fairly common to have more than one mouche on your face at a time. So you might have one on your cheek and one on your nose and one on your forehead even, you know, all over your face, walking around just like, yeah, I'm looking good. Now, all right, silly enough, of course, at some point someone's like, you know, the regular boring old round mouche, is just not cutting it.
Right. We gotta bump it up.
We gotta have custom shapes. So star-shaped mouche. Heart-shaped mouche, crescent moons, the little fake mole in the shape of a star or a crescent moon affixed to your face, sometimes multiple. I mean, I imagine it's almost like wearing like Lucky Charms on your face, you know, but then they look like moles instead of marshmallows. In one of his many great historical books, Bill Bryson relates an account of a high society woman at the time who just the most ridiculous extreme. She wore mouches on her face in the shape of a horse-drawn carriage and six horses, quote, galloping across her cheeks. So, you know, it was subtle, because, like, it was the height of fashion is in subtlety.
Picture the Wells Fargo, like,
yeah,
horse and carriage.
If you wore a mouche on your right cheek, that could signify that you supported the Whigs. If you wore it on your left cheek, you were a Tory person. It was a political statement. If you had a heart-shaped mouche on your right cheek, it meant you were married. You had a heart-shaped mouche on your left cheek, you were only engaged. So these were just sort of the ways of signifying to people as you move through the world. Eventually, like the wigs and like the powdered faces and like all the other trappings of those eras, the mouche, the fake mole, it did die out as a trend. So before the mouche died out, I want to share with you a little anecdote of, I think, it reaching. It's just the pinnacle of absurdity of where do we go from here?
The woman with the horse-drawn carriage and six horses wasn't absurd enough?
No. For a brief period, very brief period, thankfully, in the late 1700s, it was fashionable to wear fake eyebrows made out of mouse hides.
Of course.
Ew!
You know, I mean, because velvet, you know, at that point, just not going to be enough. This thankfully did not last very long.
Right.
It's unclear to me now if you needed a pair of mice to make the fake eyebrows, you know,
or if you do it in one.
Yeah, if you get enough coverage.
Depends on your pattern.
It's true. Yep. I mean, you want to match up the hides. Yep. Yeah.
Quick question.
Yes.
Before you close out the segment. How did they glue or stick it onto their face? Like, what do they use?
You would just use, you know,
boogers?
I mean, boogers, right? just a little dab of glue or adhesive.
You'd
I mean,
heat it up real good and then just burn it in. And it sticks to your flesh.
They're so grab baggy with their ingredients and stuff that maybe someone will develop, you know, like with mouse hides, it might not be the most sanitary thing or whatever.
Actually, and if, and, you know,
break
and,
out a
and,
rash.
And kids, if you want to try to bring this trend back, just get a box of Lucky Charms. Take any of the take the blue moons, just lick it and stick it.
Yep.
Go to school.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Lick it and stick it. That's good marketing slogan.
Yep.
You just take all the marshmallows, put it in the little plastic bags, and you sell it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and you just mix it up day by day.
Yeah.
Lucky mouche.
Did you mouche today?
All right, time for a quick ad break. And in honor of this week's sponsor, Warby Parker, I've gathered some interesting eyeball facts for you guys. So I was asking myself, we know a lot of living beings having two eyes. Some having several, yes. One eye. And I was just curious. I was like, are there any living creature recorded that has three eyes?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Not a lot. But I did find.
I'm surprised you found A. Yeah.
I found. So there are parietal eyes, which are kind of like, they kind of function like eyes, but they're not as fully developed. There are lizard-like reptiles called Turritaras who actually have well-developed parietal eye.
Okay.
And it even has a small lens and retina.
Ooh.
These lizards have a third eye. It's on top of their head. Like, right on top of their head.
And what is it for? Like,
so
what
they can see for. So it's a lot of it is for light sensitivity. And I found something that used to be rumored to have four eyes. It is called a spookfish.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And it looks like it has two pairs of eyes. It has some of these spookfish, type of spookfish, they have a kind of translucent head, like a normal fish. And their eyes are flat and they look up.
Oh.
And they have another kind of pair that look down. So a lot of scientists thought that they had two pairs of eyes, hence they have four eyes. But really, it's one pair of really weird eyes that are, it's like a tube or a barrel so that they can see above them and they can see below on the ocean ground. They're a deep sea fish. Deep sea, not a lot of light. So they need this to kind of maneuver and look for food and to survive. And they look really weird.
It sounds like it.
So there you go. Weird eyeball animal facts for you guys. In honor of this week's sponsor, Warby Parker. So head on over to warbyparker.com/brain and get 3-day expedited shipping.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, let's go back talking about in your face.
So in the grand Good Job Brain tradition.
Oh, we have so many.
So many. It's been over 2 years.
Yeah.
I have assembled an idiom quiz for you guys. I will give you clues, and the answer to every single one of these clues is an idiom. They all have the word face in there somewhere.
Okay.
All right, so buzzer's ready.
Should I get a handicap?
Oh, what? Because these are all American English idioms? We'll see. You can reserve the right to complain later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's very kind of you.
Yeah. It's like filing a protest ahead of time.
Yeah. All complaints must be submitted in writing. Yes. In triplicate.
All right.
Notarized.
So here we go. If you are exceptionally good at hiding emotion, you might say you have... Karen.
Poker face. Poker face.
Yes, you might say you have a good poker face.
Yeah.
If you're willing to hurt yourself in an effort to hurt someone else, you might say you are Chris.
Cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Correct.
Whoa, what? I've never heard of this.
It's like you're mad at your face. You're like, fine, I'll cut my nose off. How about that, face? And it's like, yeah, but you just cut your nose off. It's a metaphor.
Wait, so what's the meaning of it?
Meaning like you're willing to do, you want to hurt somebody or damage somebody so badly that you're willing to hurt yourself.
Right.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, very spiteful.
Yeah.
If you have an abrupt reversal of opinion or course of action, you might say you are... Chris.
Doing an about face.
Doing an about face.
180.
Okay, face means?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And especially in like a military or an army context.
Yeah, face means everybody turn around.
If you judge something based purely on its outward appearance, you might say you are... Karen.
Judging a... A book, but no, by its book face.
Spiritually, you're correct. Not so much with
at face value.
There you go.
Book face value.
Salvaged
face
it. Value.
I'll go ahead and give value. You that. I'll give you that one. Yes, you're taking it at face value.
Which comes from, of course, coins, right? Is that what it comes from? Face value of a coin. Like, you know, there's dollar gold coins where the face value is a dollar.
Yeah.
But the coin is worth $20,000.
I can see how that right.
That's what most people believe the illusion is, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But we don't really, we don't quite know.
Like a lot of idioms, I've seen multiple explanations, but most people seem to agree that's the most logical.
Got it.
Yeah. If you're concerned about maintaining your reputation and not losing respect, you might say you're trying to Karen.
Save face.
Yes. Save face. If you become exhausted trying to explain something to someone, you might say that you are
exhausted trying to explain.
Exhausted.
Oh.
Tired.
No. Chris?
No.
What do you think it was?
Well, I mean, I was exasperated.
You might say you're talking until...
Oh, talking until your face turns blue?
Yeah.
Until you're blue
in the face.
Until you're blue in the face. Yeah. Okay, sure, yep.
Because you're talking too much or because you're angry?
Just that you're talking so much.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
you're talking
your face turns blue.
Right, until you're blue in the face.
Okay.
Like lack of oxygen. If you decide to own up to something you did and are willing to accept the consequences, you might say you're ready to... Chris.
Face the music.
Correct. Face the music. It's time to face the music. Not going to like it, but you got to do it. If you have a carefully constructed plan that fails and ends up hurting you instead of accomplishing your intended goal, you might say your plan... Karen. I think you guys both had that at the same time.
Well, mine's probably wrong. Eggs on my face?
Not what I'm looking for.
Your plan blew up in your face.
Your plan blew up in your face.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I guess that's an idiom.
Egg on your face is an idiom. It may come up later in the quiz.
Okay.
And you might be working in a chemistry lab and it might actually blow up in your face.
Right,
it's possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you're the kind of person who says nice things about people when you're with them, but badmouths them to others, you might be called Karen.
Two-Face Harvey Dent.
Two-Face. Yes, I will accept Two-Face Harvey Dent. All right, last one. Here we go. If you do something embarrassing and everyone knows about it, you might say you...
have egg on your face.
Yeah. We were both looking at Karen.
I was like, what is that?
Yeah, if you do something embarrassing and you know people know, you've got egg on your face.
Presumably from the action of... eggs thrown on the stage or something.
Oh,
you know,
maybe.
Back in the old-timey days. I don't know.
Yeah, that's one possibility. Ooh. Or you're just a really sloppy eater at breakfast.
Very good.
All right. Well, you faced up to that challenge pretty well, Karen.
Okay. Not a lot of face puns. Dana's not here. That's why.
Yeah.
It's very good. All right. I don't have a segue, but I'm just going to tell you guys my kind of strategy for this segment or what inspired me. You know, I was thinking about faces, and the first thing that popped in my mind, you know, when you watch TV, there's people who have blurred faces. So I want to do a segment on blurring or the, or the technique of blurring faces on TV.
Why are their faces so blurred? Was it a birth defect?
The blurring faces is very related to having the censorship bar, like the black bar covering someone's mouth or covering genitals or whatever, or mosaicing. You see a lot of like pixelized.
Right.
Basically, TV or films, they don't want to show you what is going on because of censorship or because of the SEC, lots of reasons, or it's too gory. And this is all called pixelization, not pixelation. Pixelization.
I always associate it with, you know, 60 Minutes or Dateline, where they've got somebody,
like a
mob informant or something like that.
Or it could be because they just don't have the release to show that person's image on air.
Exactly.
If you're filming, like, you can film in a public place, but like sometimes if you're filming in a private place or whatever and you don't have the permission, they might blur someone's face out.
I always laugh a lot on like the real world type shows where they blur out butt crack, you know,
it's
like, so that's someone's job in, you know, in the production studio.
Speaking of which, I did find this person whose job is in charge of this. His name is Mitsuo Goto. He is the TV post-production wizard, and he's worked for obviously, famously, Cops, which is the real-life cop show in America. Also, True TV's Vegas Strip, which is about the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. And, and also Undercover Sting. So very related, all kind of cops reality shows. And what it comes with the territory. You're going to have a lot of butt cracks. You're going to have nudity. You're going to have wounds. You're going to have undercover cops. And so this guy, and he's in charge of a team that would work on blurring faces, among other things. So I was trying to find the first example of blurred faces. I couldn't find it. But I did find 1936, there's a Charlie Chan movie. It was called Charlie Chan at the Olympics, which were held in Berlin that year. So there were a lot of swastikas. And so they had to blot out the swastikas because it was offensive. Mm-hmm. That's the oldest example I could find.
Yeah.
And that's not really someone's face. You know, that is like an icon. So I couldn't find anything on blurred faces. But I did found an awesome interview on EW with Mitsuo Goto. And they asked him some very important questions. Let me share them with you. How much butt crack is too much butt crack?
Really getting to the point. Really getting deep in.
And he says that, you know, any crack.
No crack at all.
If it's a little crack.
It's a slippery slope.
Yeah, it is. Like, how do you put that in perspective, right? So if it's a little crack, he'll match the skin tone. So it just looks like a big butt. If it's a lot of crack, then you just blur out part of the leg, you know. A lot of his job is blurring faces because on these cop shows, it's not the perpetrator. It's not the cops. It's all the people, bystanders.
Sure.
You know, something's going on.
Yeah.
It's going to draw
a
crowd.
And they don't want to be associated with this criminal activity that's going on.
Yep. Yeah. So they have to blur all the bystander faces. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they didn't sign a release form or don't agree with it.
Right, right.
So before computer or technology, all of this stuff has to be frame by frame.
Oh, I bet.
Like all of this kind of obscuring, whether if it's a black sensor box or a blur or mosaic, had to be frame by frame. Now with computers, not only is it faster, but you can track moving objects. So you can now blur a moving object, like kind of automatically.
Oh, that's cool.
And it calculates how to move from frame to frame.
Mm-hmm. Right. A lot of the technology now is all kind of automated. You know, we see that on Google Street View. It's not like someone's there manually blurring out all the license plates or like the people walking by. They
just
have
smearing
algorithms.
Vaseline on them. Yeah.
They have algorithms that automatically do this. YouTube, when you upload a video and you want to blur faces because, you know, maybe it's like at a rally or something, it has a tool that you can use to blur faces.
Whoa.
However, as we head into having shows and films and videos be more HD, then there's more things you have to blur, with the aid of technology.
Yep.
Maybe you'll see a little logo of a brand name logo in the back or some guy in the back. And with HD, you can just zoom in, zoom in, zoom in, and you see his face.
Yep.
So you have to blur that face, too.
Yeah, low-resolution TV programming did a lot of that blurring already.
Yep, exactly. Right,
yep. Right.
Yeah. So it actually introduces more work. So there you go, a little bit about blurred faces.
I actually think about that a lot. Every time I see a blurred face, I wonder, like, what is the process? How do you go in and do that? So I'm so tickled that you brought this up.
Most of the results I found were really technical documents on algorithms on automating this system, but I couldn't find any actual like technique that people use. I assume it's probably, you know, with frame by frame or with, you know, film, actual film, you do Vaseline or scrub or something.
Vaseline or,
I don't know.
Something.
I seem to remember.
Someone tell me.
I seem to remember this was maybe in the 80s, I guess, that like the precursor to a lot of this was the blue dot. Do you guys remember this?
It would be,
I seem to remember this in like trial coverage. You know, if it was like a sensitive witness or if it was a really, you know, personal case or something and it was on like court TV or one of these shows, they would show the person sitting in the witness box and they would just be a blue circle dot.
Right
over the person's face. Yeah.
Oh.
So I don't know if that was just they didn't have the pixelization technology yet.
And of course these shows opt for either mosaicing or for face blurring because it's less intrusive. I mean, if you're gonna blot out a whole bunch of stuff, and basically it's a screen full of blue dots or black boxes. You're like, well, I don't really know what's going on. It's really distracting. But like the blurring, you notice it and you don't notice it.
Traffic jams. Tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right.
The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Well, before we sign off for the day, as you know, we have been chasing our nemesis, international thief Carmen Sanmateo.
Through time and space.
Right. She stole our beloved time machine, our FARTIS.
Yes. Fancy and ridiculous time interloper system.
And we were going primary to, FARTIS.
Yes. Yeah. So we had to get into the emergency backup time machine and go after her. And we've chased her. We've chased her everywhere. We've chased her from Gettysburg to Berlin. And so finally, we actually last week caught up with Carmen's lackey, Heide Klue. Heide Klue, supermodel and cat burglar.
Slash cat burglar.
True to her nature, Heide Klue, before being caught, did in fact hide a clue for us in her little speech that she gave as they were dragging her away to trivia jail. And this is one of the things that Heide said to us. And she says, "A better, easier scheme, but it really takes higher devotion and youthfulness." She was talking about, you know, the scheme that she was going to run with Carmen. Mm-hmm. "A better, easier scheme, but it really takes higher devotion and youthfulness." And we figured that there was some secret message or clue hidden in there.
Yeah,
because if you look it up, it's not, you know, we've been doing a lot of famous speeches,
right,
or a lot of previous clues.
Yep.
And this one, nothing really showed up.
Such an odd turn of phrase.
Yeah. A lot of really, it's kind of a lot of strange collection of words there. And as it turns out, a lot of you figured out the solution. You figured out what date to punch in to the FARTIS. And the way you did that was the first letter of every word in the sentence is A-B-E-S. B-I-R-T-H-D-A-Y.
Abe's birthday!
Abe's birthday. And what we had to do was travel to February 12th, 1809, when the man who would become President Abraham Lincoln was born in a one-room log cabin in rural Kentucky.
So if you guys went to the site and clicked on the TARDIS and punched in
02121809,
you would have seen a little postcard of a cabin. And that is Abe Lincoln's cabin.
So off we went to February 12th, 1809. And this is what transpired.
"Oh, this is going to be the scheme of a lifetime. I can almost taste it. No! Brainiacs, how did you find me? I knew that awful Heide Klue was going to sell me out, right when I was about to commit my biggest heist ever! Think about it! Baby Lincoln! All the gravitas of President Lincoln and all of the cuteness of babies! I'd make a fortune! I even had a guy who was going to get me tiny top hats and beards! 47 pacifiers ago, our 4 mommies brought forth a new sippy cup. How cute would that be? Well, it doesn't matter now since you ruined everything. I guess I'll go back to trivia jail. It's not so bad. They have Sudoku."
Man, these schemes up there, they get worse and worse.
Like, I admire the effort, but just plan a little bit better.
Why not just go, you have a time machine, just go invest in Apple stocks from 1995 or something. I don't even really get it.
Netflix.
But anyway, the important thing is, thanks to all of you listeners out there for helping out so much, we caught for a second time Carmen Sanmateo. It's better than some other television shows where they never catch the international thief at the end.
She actually goes to jail.
Right.
Carmen Sanmateo does.
Carmen Sanmateo goes to jail so far every time. So far, Good Job Brain 2, Carmen Sanmateo 0.
All right, and that is our show. Thanks to you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about your face or what's in your face. We have a dedicated booger segment. Next time, wear your Lucky Charms as your moosh.
Yeah.
Now you know. And you can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And check out our sponsor, Warby Parker, warbyparker.com/goodjobbrain. And we'll see you guys.
We captured Carmen Sanmateo.
This calls for a celebration.
Yes, you know what to do.
Do it, Macapella!
Yeah.
Don't sue us. Please, please don't sue us. Please, please don't sue us. Please, please don't sue us.
She's a satirical swindler, legally distinct from others. She's a fair use finagler who is plainly parody. She's discreetly designed so we don't get calls from lawyers. Tell me,
who in the heck is
Carmen Sanmateo?
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.